And now the intersection of faith and fiction on the Talk of the Nation opinion page. Tomorrow, August 12th, was supposed to be the publication date of a new historical novel about Aisha, the youngest wife of the Prophet Muhammad, called Jewel of Medina. But the Ballantine Division at Random House postponed publication this past May due to fears that the book would offend some Muslims and might incite a few to violence. Asra Nomani wrote about the story in the Wall Street Journal. Her op-ed is called "You Still Can't Write About Muhammad." She's a journalist and a regular contributor to NPR's Tell Me More and joins us here in Studio 3A, and it's nice to have you on the program today.
Thanks.
And we also want to hear from listeners. Should Random House have published the book? What's the line between censorship and taste when it comes to fiction about religious figures? Our phone number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog, where you'll find a statement from Random House and from Sherry Jones, the author of The Jewel of Medina, as well as excerpts from the book. And since the book has not been published, this is one of the few chances to see her writing firsthand. It's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And let me ask you, Asra Nomani, tell us about the book.
Well, I've got it here. I got my galley earlier this summer, and it was my summer reading. It took me all of this last few months to basically absorb this book and whether it deserve to see the light of day. You know, I grew up on reading The Red Tent, read The Da Vinci Code, and I've increasingly believed that historical fiction is critical for understanding Islamic history. The book basically takes you into the life of Aisha, the youngest wife of the Prophet Muhammad, who was one of a harem full of wives. And it takes you, like any novel, through her struggles and tribulations from girlhood to womanhood. It takes you into issues of lust, love, jealousy, intrigue, battles, politics, all of the stuff that was the story of the birth of Islam.
Could be pretty sensitive stuff for some people.
It could be. And also it's, you know, the kind of stuff that I don't think most people know about. You know, in this book, you are basically going into the trenches in the way novels take you, into stories about the battles and about the wives and the alliances and the companions who were all elbowing for power. And so in that way, you know, you actually have the sort of life breathed into the life of into the pages of Islamic history.
So the same way that we might learn about the history of the Tudor kings through the other Boleyn girl,
right.
This might let some people who wouldn't ordinarily learn much about Islam in the early period learn about Aisha.
Yeah, and there's going to be moments, and there are moments of that are going to be seriously offensive to Muslims who revere Aisha and Muhammad and Ali and Umar and Abu Bakr and all of the people of the birth of Islam in a way that, you know, doesn't allow us to see their humanity oftentimes. But like any good novel, it's a tale of redemption and reconciliation. And so, you know, you have to sort of play it out.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us about the story behind the story and why that novel's not going to be on bookshelves tomorrow.
Well, I got the book in the beginning of the summer, like I mentioned, because Sherry Jones had read some of my work and she was trying to rally support for this against this decision by Random House.
Well, how did the decision come about?
Yeah. Well, what happened is that Random House sent the galleys to professors and academics, and a professor in the University of Texas at Austin, Denise Spellberg, got a copy of the book, and she had written her own academic book about Aisha. She was seriously offended by the book. She is on contract with another imprint at Random House, contacted her editor on April 30th. The editor spoke to her, and in an email to Random House executives told the other parts of the publishing house that this professor thought that the book would be a national security threat, that it was virtually a declaration of war with the Muslim world, and that Random House would face serious backlash, security and safety. Safety-wise.
Well, she wasn't the only one who felt that way.
Well, apparently then what happened is within a day, Random House decided that they would possibly postpone the publication. But then they shipped the book off to, I've been told, three other experts and were given warnings that, in fact, there might be security risks. They checked with their security officials and decided that they didn't want to take the risk. And so by late June, a termination agreement had been signed.
Well, let me just read a little bit of what Random House had to say. They sent us a statement, I think the same statement they sent to everybody. After sending out advance editions of the novel Jewel of Medina, we received in response from credible and unrelated sources unsolicited cautionary advice not only that the publication of this book might be offensive to some in the Muslim community, but also that it could incite acts of violence by a small radical segment. We stand firmly by our responsibility to support our authors and the free discussion of ideas, even those that may be construed as offensive by some. However, a publisher must weigh that responsibility against others that it also bears, and in this instance we decided, after much deliberation, to postpone publication for the safety of the author, employees of Random House Incorporated, booksellers, and anyone else who would be involved in distribution and sale of the book. So they do have such a responsibility.
Right, and so they came out on the side of caution, and what's been really fun this last week is that the blogs and the internet are the only thing's ablaze with comments and debate and back and forth about whether or not this book should be published. Muslims are weighing in on literary websites, and I think just what I'd hope would happen is happening. Sure, we might end up with a scenario that has played out in other situations like the cartoon controversy, but I believe
the Danish cartoons with caricatures of Muhammad.
But what I argue in my piece and what I believe firmly as a Muslim and as a writer is that we can't allow the lowest common denominator in society to define our conversations as civilizations, and literature is a critical element in moving civilizations forward. We've got to accept that, and we also need to allow for the kind of conversations that would actually move the Muslim world and the West together forward.
Yet you say that might happen. Hundreds of people were killed in rioting over those Danish cartoons.
I know, and I'm not naive about any of the risks that are playing out because of ideologies out there that support violence. But at the same time, I know that we can be pretty smart, and we can try to figure out how to take on challenges like that.
Let's see if we get some callers in on the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And we'll begin with Abu. And Abu's with us from Charlottesville in Virginia.
Hello. How are you doing, sir?
Very well, thanks.
Thank you for receiving my call. I agree with your guest completely. You see, I'm a Muslim. I mean, some of the things that are going on is actually, to me, as far as I'm concerned, it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, I mean, there should be a religious freedom. I mean, we are free to say what we want to say. And I feel like Random House will have the opportunity to actually publish a book, regardless of what the situation would be. I mean, all said and done, is at the same time, I strongly disagree with the Danish cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad. I mean, that is way to the extreme. But, I mean, talking about Prophet Muhammad's wife, these are the things that happen in daily life. I mean, it's about politics. It's about how human beings would behave in terms of jealousy and everything else. So I see no reason why that book should not be published. Because as a Muslim, I do believe that until we are able to debate certain points or certain opportunities, I don't think the problem will ever solve. We as Muslims should be able to sit down, even though we disagree, we should be able to sit down and debate certain issues and say, look, you are wrong. This is how we say it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the first principles we're ever taught as children of Muslim families is this concept of adab. It's etiquette, and it's about our decorum as Muslims in society. And sadly, I feel like in the politics of the day, that's been one of the first things to go, and that's what I wish we could invoke again as a guiding principle when we deal with controversial issues.
Right, right.
Okay, Abu, thanks very much for the call.
Certainly.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go next to, this will be Ahmed. Ahmed is with us from Minneapolis.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I actually wanted to comment that and the publishing house, the publishing company, made the right decision not to publish that because, first of all, this novel would have been as offensive to the Muslims as a novel which would depict Mary as an adulterous woman, which will still be offensive to Muslims and Christians. So this would be very offensive to Muslims worldwide in a time that there's a lot of tension between the Muslim majority parts of the world and the West. I don't think we need any more tension like this going around in different very critical areas of the world that actually would put the life of the troops in danger, as well as the Christians and the people, Westerners, who are actually working in Muslim-majority countries, with the people who are not understanding the proper way to deal with this. Because if you were to look at the life of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, himself, there were many times that he was insulted. People did all sorts of things to him. They yelled at him. They screamed at them. They insulted him. And he dealt with it in a very proper way. But many Muslims, I'm afraid, around the world would not follow his ways, ironically, and they would resort to violence. So I really think the publishing company made the right decision not to publish a novel like this.
But don't you feel sad that as a community that we are defined by that lowest common denominator, and that when we talk about Muslims and them responding with violence, that then includes you and me?
Ahmed? He may have left
Ahmed, us. Yeah, and that is ultimately like my sadness about this, because, you know, as soon as you start dealing with any community in monolithic terms, you are not having a very sophisticated conversation. And that's exactly what's happened here. And, you know, ultimately, I don't want the extremist, violent element of any society to define all of any community.
We're talking with Asra Nomani on the opinion page, her op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, "You Still Can't Write About Muhammad." You can find a link to it on our website at npr.org/blog of the nation. And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And you mentioned earlier the scholar Denise Spellberg, who was involved in this controversy. She also wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal saying she did not kill the Jewel of Medina, that she was just one of many people consulted, and she doesn't have the power to spike a novel. But she also said that the book is poorly researched and presents a fallacious picture of a very real person's life, that she would have been fine with it if it had been accurate.
Right. I think clear issue with that kind of criticism is, you know, we could all get in line on books that we don't think pass muster. And, you know, I think that there's a novel offers us a real insight and window into issues about women. It brings to life names like Khadija and Salama and Aisha and Fatima, who are otherwise not commonly known outside the Muslim world. But I'm not a literary critic. And I think that if we get into the business of, you know, raising red flags because a book just isn't good, then we've got problems.
It was going to be published, we should point out, by Ballantine Books, Random House. Apparently they thought its literary merits at least qualified rated publication.
Right. The you know, letter from the editor said that she was up all night, you know, reading the book and couldn't put it down.
There was an agreement that she could also market it now to other publishers.
Right.
They've withdrawn from the deal. So,
and as I understand it, the book will be published. The publishers are lining up to put it out there. And I really do believe that the Muslim world can absorb this book just as the Christian world absorbed the Da Vinci Code, Last Temptation of Christ, and all of the other, you know, creative expressions that people thought took too much license with history.
Let's talk with Mabel. Mabel with us from Greenwood Springs in Colorado.
Hi.
Excuse me, Glenwood Springs.
Glenwood Springs. We're criticizing a book that we haven't even read. But with the word, the use of the word harem or harim for the prophet's wives, that's very inaccurate to begin with. He married for political alliance and to protect widows whose husbands had been killed in battle. And if the book is going to be that inaccurate, I don't say not publish it, but I don't know what to do about not publishing or publishing. That's another issue. I'm just worried about that kind of inaccuracy.
I think that that's just the kind of conversation books elicit. You know, that's why there are book clubs, and that's why authors go on lecture circuits, because we're meant as writers to stimulate conversation. We can't settle debates, I don't think, many times. But writers have, you know, annoyed and irked great powers and conventional wisdom since the beginning of time. And no author, I think, can ever claim to get it all right. But what we can try to do is start conversations.
Yes. And all in all, I'm fascinated by Aisha and the other wives. They were great women.
Yeah, and I think what the, you know, ultimately this book landed on my lap because I firmly believe, just like women in Christian and Jewish histories have had to do, we have to reclaim the stories of women in Islamic history because they've been forgotten. And while they may be revered, we hardly know the, you know, tales of Hajar when she was standing in Mecca with her baby Ishmael, and yet we walk in her footsteps every time we do the pilgrimage to Mecca. And so this is my own dream as a Muslim woman in the 21st century, that we actually take back their stories and start debates on in the modern day.
Thank you, Mabel.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Ross in Brooklyn, New York. Random House is a publisher and a business. This is not censorship. Nobody's stopping Random House from publishing the book but themselves because they think that's what's best for their business. It's only censorship if somebody stopped Random House from publishing the book, not if they decide to do it themselves.
Well, you know, of course, Random House is a corporation, and so they decided at one point that this was a good money-making venture, and then they decided, wait a second, no, it isn't. Other publishing houses, like I mentioned, are going to make that same equation. I wouldn't doubt it if we end up with a movie out of this novel, because ultimately imaginations of people have been captured, and that's what writers try to do.
And then we get into the fight over images of Muhammad, which is a whole other thing.
Right, and that's one we need to take on too.
Asra Nomani, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Asra Nomani is a journalist and a regular contributor to NPR's Tell Me More. You can find a link to her Wall Street Journal op-ed on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. You can also find there the statement from Random House and from Sherry Jones, the author, along with excerpts from The Jewel of Medina at our blog as well, npr.org/blogofthenation. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.